This week in the Famicom Dojo podcast, we discuss Broken Age Act 1, what does or doesn't make an adventure game, and talk about the first game we've moved from the pile of shame to our future retro. Hint, it's not the Black Eyed Peas experience.
Hey Sean.
Hey Bank.
Oh man, I just got done playing some Broken Age.
Oh great! So that trick worked for you?
Yeah, like you know, I was a backer on Kickstarter, and I was waiting for this email because like everyone's been talking about it, you included. You're like, Kevin, play Broken Age, and I'm like, At first, I thought maybe I just didn't pledge high enough because they're calling it kind of like a beta or something, but
right.
I don't know. I still don't know. I never got an email. I checked my spam folder and everything, but the trick is I'm a member of, you know, what is it?
Humble Bundle
website, whatever. So I went there and it wasn't listed in my purchases, but you suggested to resend the key or something.
Yeah. There was a link that I found on the Double Fine forums in the public area. Where people were talking about the problems they were having, and someone posted that link, and I sent it to you.
Yeah, but it worked. It worked. But then I realized that I hadn't like logged onto Steam for like a year, so Steam had to like update itself, and then I couldn't remember what my like. Normally, it's just an auto login, but since I've been off for so long, it wanted my password again, and I'm like, What on earth is my Steam password? Because
Double Fine has since released a backer update explaining what people can do if they haven't gotten their keys yet. But at the time, we didn't really know what to do because I got my email just fine. And I was playing and I was like, you know, Kevin, you got to play this, as you were saying. But it took us a good few hours to try and find a solution for you. And there were a few problems, like some people who had their email addresses changed since they pledged. Humble Bundle got their old email address, so now they have a form submission. That people can use to update that, and they'll send it out to people again. But that refresh worked for you just great.
Oh yeah, no problem.
So what about the game? I mean, I've been playing it for a bit, and I haven't finished Act One yet, so no spoilers.
Yeah, well, I haven't either. I'm about 2 hours into it. I had a problem with one of my saves, so I replayed about a half an hour. But gosh, what can I say without any spoilers? Because I stopped watching the documentaries a long time ago.
I never started. I'm a really bad backer.
Okay, I watched the first three parts and I really enjoyed them. But then they started showing bits of the game, kinda, part of it was I didn't have time. I mean, they're like an hour each, and there's like 10 of them or 15. I mean, that's
a lot of time. Yeah,
chunk of time. I plan to watch them all. I don't know. Someday.
Maybe after you finish the game. Because I know it, as of when the game came out, all the future versions of those videos are going to assume you know what Act 1 ends, how that ends. So don't watch them anymore.
Basically, I went, I'm giving money to Tim Schafer.
Right.
This may take a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So it kind of surprised me because, I mean, I heard the update that it was being delayed, but like for me that wasn't a big deal because I kind of forgot that that's when it was supposed to be due anyway.
Sure.
And then when they were like, it's out, at first I kept hearing the word beta and I'm like, I didn't pledge that high, so right. I'm going to wait a little more. But you're like, no, you can play it now. And then, I don't know, I was surprised by it, but I went in knowing absolutely nothing other than the title of the game.
Ditto. I know there was like a boy and a girl and that was it.
And that's the way to go. That's why I don't want to tell too much about this right now, but that is totally the way to go. Because if I would have had any sort of expectation, I wouldn't have been as surprised and delighted as I was.
And you know, we knew it was coming soon because they did say they were going to release part one in the early part of this year.
No, I've been in a lot of Kickstarters, and they say lots of things. You know, I wouldn't have been surprised if it got pushed back again. You know, most projects that I've backed let's see, in the 2 years that I've been using Kickstarter, let's see, there's this Broken Age, which isn't done yet. And Leisure Suit Larry got done. And the other 10 projects I backed, I have still not received anything.
Okay. Yeah, I went back and looked at my pledge, and I think it said that they were expected to deliver the digital version of the game in like October 2012 or something.
Yeah.
This is the first game that I've backed that has come out of in any form.
Didn't you back Larry?
I did not back Larry, but I did buy it.
I think Space Venture is coming out pretty soon too, right?
Did I back that? Oh man, I gotta check. I backed Shovel Knight.
Yep, that one. I backed Mighty Number 9, but at the time I didn't have much money, but I wish I would have backed it for a physical reward level now. Mm-hmm. Those USB sticks that look like Famicom carts, wish I would have gotten. I think I got a paper box. I think I backed that high, but I didn't get... But it's still, you know, I don't know. I backed that, but I mean, I knew that one wasn't coming for a long time.
Can I just say I'm just so glad that we name checked this last week, and then it just happened to come out like a few days later.
Yeah, it's great.
So if we're not going to talk about the game itself too much, let's.
I want to just say one thing about it.
Sure.
It is a beautiful looking game. It's not an art style that I thought I would like originally, because you know I was kind of hoping for something more like, oh, I don't know, Sam and Max or Day of the Tentacle, you know, kind of the classic Tim Schafer, LucasArts type thing. But I like it, and there is just an absolute sense of wonderment and wanting to click on everything that I haven't felt for a very long time.
I totally agree, and it's really kind of seamless. You know, if you've played a lot of adventure games before, you can kind of see where, like, you know, animation stop and start and dialogue, and then it kind of jumps you in and out kind of abruptly, and there's just something very fluid about the way this game moves.
Oh, yeah.
It's even though it's all a 2D-ish art style, it's gorgeous. So, like, I've taken a few still captures, and they just look phenomenal. But it doesn't look like an adventure game you expect to look like. It's amazing.
You know how for a long time they're always like talking about this game's so good it looks like an oil painting or whatever when they were talking about like God of War and stuff, and I keep thinking, I'm like, no, it doesn't. But this game, yeah, it does.
But if that's not for you, there is a trick to play it in 8-bit mode, quote unquote.
I just heard about that. Yeah.
we'll post that in the show notes. I saw a video for it.
Have you tried it?
I haven't tried it, but the short version is that you reduce your resolution to like 640 by 480. Then there's an option that comes up in the hotkeys menu that you can click, and then you can ramp your resolution back up, and the effect will still work. It just kind of pixelates it. It doesn't actually change the graphics. It just kind of puts it through a filter.
Okay. Well, regardless, I mean, when I was when I got to Secret of Monkey Island Special Edition, I kept playing with shifting it back to. Did you play that?
Oh no! And like another game that does that is Halo Anniversary, and I never.
What Halo? Wait! It shifts it to what?
So it's Halo Anniversary is a remake of the original Halo Combat Evolved, and they kept the same maps and the same controls, and so they have their own skins and better models for all the levels, but you can hit a button and then it goes back to the original Xbox version.
Yeah, so you can look back nostalgically on not that long ago.
Come on.
Oh my gosh, it is old. Wait, Halo's 2001?
Yeah, it was original Xbox, like I said.
Oh my gosh. Halo is 13 years old.
No, Halo is a prepubescent child, which is appropriate.
Yeah, because that's mostly who plays it. I'm getting old now because I'm still filing Halo under like new game.
right. Well, there are new Halo games being made, but there aren't really new adventure games being made anymore.
Well, that, you know what? That is where you're wrong.
Well, I mean, and a Kickstarter has proven me wrong. I think they've shown that there is a market now.
A lot of it is Kickstarter, but if you made that statement like 2-3 years ago, I would totally agree with you, because unless you were German, where for some reason the genre kept going. Like, did you ever play Simon the Sorcerer?
No.
They made two fantastic Simon the Sorcerer games. You must have at least heard of it. You're a Red Dwarf fan, right?
Yeah.
Chris Berry was Simon the Sorcerer.
No.
Okay, you go right now. You got an iPhone, right?
Yeah.
Simon the Sorcerer, it's $2 on the App Store right now.
All right, I'm adding that to the show notes too.
That or if it's on Good Old Games, that would be a better way to play it.
Okay.
And it might be more than $2, but I mean, then you right. can play it on the computer. But yeah, he only voice acted the first one, but they got someone else for the second. But it's great. It's great. It's a very, very British humor type game. You ever play Discworld?
I feel like I should know what that is. No.
Wait. You don't know what the Discworld game is, or you don't know what the Discworld series
is? It's a novel series, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I've never read it, no.
None of the... Okay. You know what? Then this podcast will be therapeutic for you and for anybody who hasn't. Really? You're so into, like, Douglas Adams. Terry Pratchett is the Douglas Adams of fantasy.
Yeah, I'm not really a big fantasy reader. Like, the things that get me into fantasy are Game of Thrones, which is less about the fantasy and more about the political intrigue and other nonsense. Yeah. And then there's Dragon Age, which is very heavily based on Song of Ice and Fire.
Well, like, I'm not a fantasy guy either. Actually, it was Terry Pratchett that got me into reading fantasy at all.
Okay.
But what it is, I mean, it's a parody of the fantasy genre, though. And probably if I had actually read any real fantasy books, I'd get more out of it. But it's funny enough as its own. Okay, because I was going to compare the Simon the Sorcerer game to the Discworld game, but since you haven't played any of those, it's really good. It's very British, if you like British humor. And for our listeners, if you don't particularly like British humor, probably skip it. Great game, good voice acting. It's made under the Infocom branding.
Yes. Oh, Infocom. We have talked about Infocom in the past. Yes, the feelies.
I think Infocom died in like 90, 89, something like that.
Sounds right.
By Activision, and whenever Activision released an adventure game, they like for a couple of them, they brought Infocom back. Like when they released Return of Zork and Nemesis and Grand Inquisitor, but they also brought. Wow, I've played a lot of adventure games. Okay, anyway.
Yeah.
But they brought it back for Simon the Sorcerer. But the actual developer of the game was a company called AdventureSoft, which used to go by the name HorrorSoft.
Oh, fascinating.
At least the Elvira games.
Okay.
Which were like really famous at the time because they were like really incredibly gruesome adventure games. Mm-hmm. But Simon the Sorcerer is really... Oh, and they did an adventure game called The Feeble Files.
The Feeble Files.
That one didn't do as well, but it's notable as being like a four-disc CD-ROM game for the Amiga. So like really late era Amiga title. But, you know, all those games, the Simon the Sorcerer, the Discworld, stuff like that, they were made in kind of that like golden age of adventure games. You know, when LucasArts was still a thing.
Right.
Every franchise was getting an adventure game. But then they tried to do what a lot of genres did. King's Quest did it. All kinds of things did. They tried to go 3D.
Oh.
So Simon the Sorcerer 3 was still a pretty well-written game, but it had that ugly polygon, doesn't age well, PlayStation-esque 3D. Discworld did a little better. Their 3D looked good, but you know, King's Quest went 3D. I never played that one. It was like King's Quest 8.
Oh yikes! Okay.
Or 9? I don't remember. But like all of those games, none of them really appealed to me because I thought that was a terrible way to do an adventure game from like a first person perspective or a third person, you know. So. All of them, that was like the last installment. All of them like tried this 3D one because no one was buying 2D games anymore, and it just killed all these series. But like someone in Germany bought the rights to the Simon the Sorcerer series and kept making them like three additional games in the series, but only in German.
Huh. Wow.
So, like the adventure genre was still kind of existent, but as a mainstream thing, it was gone. I mean, there were all these homebrew ones. Like they had like basically someone found a way to like get into like the engines that were being used for like old Sierra games and LucasArts games, and people were able to make their own adventure games. But it was a really, really like I don't know, niche group, you know.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, being a big fan of adventure games and kind of lamenting their demise, I was super happy that, for instance, like the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade game that LucasArts did is available on Steam, because that was to me not like one of the last great adventure games, but it was one of my absolute favorites. And there's a bit of an action sequence to it, but mostly it's an adventure game.
Yeah, and wasn't one of the original LucasArts point and clicks included as a bonus in the Wii game?
I didn't play the Wii game.
Oh, neither did I, but like that was the thing that might have gotten me to buy it. I think Fate of Atlantis was
right.
Was on the disc.
Yeah, we have done a previous podcast about this before where everyone knows Fate of Atlantis, but no one knows about the Last Crusade version. Well.
But things, services like Good Old Games and stuff are really making it that you can play those games again.
Oh, and they're so cheap. Oh, God. Something just went on sale recently. I totally forgot what it was. I'm gonna head over there. Maybe it was on Steam. I forget exactly. No, I was so convinced that adventure games were dead before this that in 2009, back when I was, you know, a fully fledged pauleteer, I made a video called The Top 10 Adventure Games of the Aughts. Or, sorry, The Top 5. And it really pissed people off because none of them are technically adventure games, but they were all games with really strong adventure aesthetics to them and like really a strong story. So I guess the big criticism I got was, well, first of all, you can't redefine what adventure game means for the purpose of your video. And I'm like, heck yeah, I can. The second thing was that, you know, it's just like, well, any game that has a story is an adventure game now. It's like, well, no, that's not really where I was going with that. But here's the list, and let me know if you think I'm crazy. Eternal Darkness.
Okay.
Prince of Persia: Sands of Time.
Okay.
Mass Effect.
Okay, keep going.
Fable 2.
All right.
And the one that got everyone and pissed people off, Halo ODST.
What?
Listen.
Right. Unsubscribe.
Oh my goodness. All right, I'll link this one in the show notes too.
Not right.
The sort of linchpin I thought was like story structure and like the way you played the game. So the one thing that every one of these games had in common was they were very discrete ways of playing. I mean, Fable 2 had the typical kind of mission system, but there were like three specific time zones you played in. Mass Effect was definitely just all like mission structure, but there were definitely the major hitting points. Sands of Time always did a flash forward to your next section. Eternal Darkness was done in chapters like a book because you're reading a book as your things went along. And Halo similarly had kind of like a big overworld that would go into like the personal story of one of the characters. And it was that sentiment, regardless of their mechanics, that I thought made them like adventure games. That's what I was trying to get across. But I guess the title is misleading.
Well, they're all alike in another way, too.
What's that?
None of them are adventure games.
But I was so convinced adventure games were dead at that time that it didn't really matter. It's like, well, you know, they're never coming back, so I might as well co-opt this title. And people got really upset and started mentioning actual adventure games that had been released since 1990, whatever.
When did you do that video?
It was 2000. It was like the end of 2009, so like the aughts were over, basically.
Okay. Well, when did Telltale really kind of come back in there?
I really don't know. The first Telltale game I ever played was the Back to the Future series, and that was just...
Because Telltale was around for, I think that might have been your thing. Because I think it was around the time Telltale was coming back. So because I know like games like Bone and stuff were mm-hmm. like 2007 maybe 2006, and a Strong Bad's cool game for attractive people.
Yeah, I didn't really count those though, because those felt like they were kind of niche. But now we have Kickstarter, and they're coming back in a big way. And we have Double Fine's been doing adventure like games, Like I guess Brutal Legend, you know, is more of an RTS sort of, but you know, it had a lot of the sensibility of like Full Throttle, for instance.
Yeah, I guess in theme, but like I wouldn't call Brutal Legend an adventure game. I'd call Psychonauts a little bit more of an adventure game than Brutal Legend. I still wouldn't even call that an adventure game per se.
Cave, which I mentioned last week, is an adventure game, even though it's kind of an adventure platformer. You know, I really feel like, you know, there's point and click adventures, which is like what everyone thinks of, but you can be an adventure game and not be point and click.
Well, I mean, I guess maybe we should define what we're talking about. Sure. Adventure games, though. For me, adventure games started like Zork. You know, that's an adventure game.
Okay.
And then the evolution of them was to text plus graphic games, like Ulysses and the Golden Fleece or Mystery House. You know, some of the early Sierra things that weren't animated; they were just static images.
Okay.
Then the adventure genre moved to the like the original, like King's Quest, Leisure Suit Larry, Police Quest, Space Quest. Wow, those are all Sierra, but you know, stuff where it was moved your character around on the screen, but you also typed stuff.
Right. Yeah. Some of the early LucasArts games were like that too.
But I mean, the thing is, around that time, they went two different directions. Some of them went the point and click games, and others made did you ever play a game like Shadowgate or Deja Vu?
I own and love both of them, especially Deja Vu.
Yeah, and those they were called Mac Ventures, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Made originally for the Macintosh, and they were ported to a number of things, but that was kind of that kind of led nowhere, though. They made a number of really great games using that style, but it just kind of disappeared.
I should say that the LucasArts games I'm thinking of are more of kind of like trying to split the difference, because whereas, you know, those Sierra games you mentioned, you had to type things in, like the LucasArts games actually had the verbs on the screen, so you would click a letter, like, you know, walk, and then you point to the place you wanted to walk to. The later Sierra games had the graphical icons, and even Leisure Suit Larry Reloaded keeps those for context and whatever. But you know, it's, yeah, people tend to forget that point and clicks were an evolution of the adventure game and not the end all be all, which is why I don't feel like we should really restrict our definition to those kinds of games, even though Broken Age is a point and click.
I guess. And I guess when you're talking about games that became adventure games after the point and click genre died, I guess the hard thing to go is it pretty much followed a very linear path. You know, text adventures, graphic plus text,
mm-hmm.
3D graphic, character movement plus text, mouse based only, and then to nothing.
Yeah.
I think what they were hoping was they would continue on to games like the fourth Monkey Island game, Monkey Island, and the fantastic, though kind of on my pile of shame, Skulls, Grim Fandango.
Sure.
Grim Fandango is a game that I will play if I can play it. This is strange, because like it does. I'm a Mac user, and it doesn't work on new Macs.
Oh, is it because they're Intel?
Yeah, it doesn't work on Intel Macs. So I have a copy of the game that I would love to play, but recently I hear that the Scum VM, you know, Scum.
Yep, that's what a lot of good old games. Actually, isn't that what the Dreamin' Project re-release uses? Yeah.
Dreamin' Project, Broken Sword series, Sierra games, all kinds of stuff. It went far beyond LucasArts. But I hear that they've got a program called Residue, which, you know, comes after Scum.
Got it.
It's supposed to play Grim Fandango. I haven't played around with it yet, but probably after Broken Age, that's what I want to do next, because, wow, Tim Schafer's kind of a genius.
Right? Who knew that you just had to hold out this long and it would come back around?
I didn't get far into Grim Fandango. I really liked it, but then I didn't have a computer that could play it for the longest time, and it wasn't ported to anything.
Huh.
Yeah, actually, the version I have isn't even a Mac version. It's the version, but because it just doesn't it I just I couldn't make it work. I don't even know if it got an official Mac version now that I think about it. But I think it did, but I was looking for I don't know. Oh, by the way, speaking of good old games and the Scum Engine and things that are very cheap to play for adventure games, Flight of the Amazon Queen and Beneath a Steel Sky are free on good old games and are fantastic. But they're not just free on good old games, they're free in general. The publisher of those games, I believe it's Revolution Software, made them public domain a number of years back. So you can download them from good old games with all the documentations and easy to use packages. That's what I recommend. Or you can get just the files themselves right off the Scum VN website.
Oh, that's crazy.
So, and those are good games too. In fact, if we ever do a segment where, you and I play a game for the first time, I haven't played Flight of the Amazon Queen yet, but I've heard really good things about it. I have played Beneath a Steel Sky, and play it.
All right.
It's
Yeah,
great.
I haven't played either, which you probably could have guessed. All right. So this week's Future Retro, what do you got?
Oh gosh. For future retro, well, I'm gonna go with a big one, I guess.
Yeah.
Super Mario 3D World.
Oh my. Yes. Well, that finally arrived. That's good to hear.
Yes, it actually arrived the day we recorded our last podcast.
Nice, great.
Not with enough time, and I'm gonna revisit that. That's my game of the year. I know I didn't play it until this year, but it'll be my game of this year too.
I was going to ask. So you're revising the last week's podcast from Earthbound to Mario 3D World.
I would also, yeah, yep.
Okay.
Although Earthbound is definitely probably got is my most loved game that I actually played in the year we're talking about.
True, 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 true. Yeah, right. Because you didn't actually play Mario 3D World in 2013, but okay, you
No.
know it's just complicated. Let's just leave it at that. But you did tell me a story about you and your wife playing it for how long?
We played 5 hours straight.
Oh my goodness.
Great kids. But they just eventually put themselves to bed.
Oh, is that what happens? Oh, I get to look forward to that then.
Well, they just kind of passed out on the couch, but we just like yeah,
You're a great parent.
no, I'm a wonderful parent. Yeah, but we played from 9 o'clock till 2 o'clock.
Wow.
Work day for my wife, but we had to get the stars. I mean,
Obviously.
I think it's a great time to be a gamer right now. I mean, Broken Age and Super Mario 3D World have done things that I have been missing for a long time. They have delighted me.
Oh, goodness.
Is I'm playing it and something happens that I didn't expect would happen. And I'm thrilled by that because games don't surprise me anymore.
Yeah, I've been kind of feeling jaded too, but that's been changing lately.
Yeah, I was feeling really jaded. I mean, but okay, Super Mario 3D World, I came in expecting to be another. I like Mario platformers. I think probably you probably like the old ones, but
Yeah.
you never really got into Galaxy and you ignored the new Super Mario franchise.
But 3D World is the one that seemed like is the one I really wanted to play. And I've been told that 3D Land was really good too, so.
3D Land was good, but and I would have been content if it was an HD version of 3D Land, just extra levels, because I really like that. But it's so much more. It's so much better.
I kind of have a thing against the whole cat outfit.
Okay, you might not like the look of it, but it brings some amazingly unique gameplay elements to it.
Okay.
I also think the Boomerang Brother costume looks stupid, and at first I thought it was just a glorified fireball, but the actual fact that it takes a little while for it to return adds a different mechanic to the whole thing.
Interesting. Okay.
Don't want to spoil any and also to get all the stars, you have to replay each level a few different times, experimenting with different characters, different abilities, because some characters jump farther than other characters, and
Okay.
there's It's a good game. It's a really good game. And it's beautiful. Like, Nintendo's not one that's wowed me with visuals in a very, very long time. It is a beautiful looking game. Nintendo nailed the lighting. They got it just right. It's not doing anything too complex, but it's the art style is consistent and gorgeous. Okay, bold statement. This is the best Mario video game made since Super Mario Bros. 3.
Whoa.
Yeah, and in that time, that means I'm including Super Mario World, Mario 64, Mario Sunshine, and blasphemy as it may be to a lot of people, Mario Galaxy.
Well, not to me. I actually did like Mario 3 better than I liked Mario World, because it seemed like a lot of even though it was a wonderful game and it was great for the Super Nintendo, it just seemed like a lot of the ideas were rehashed from Mario 3.
So that's why I'll compare it mostly to Mario 3, because I was expecting, because new Super Mario Brothers is a lot like Mario 1, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Super Mario and new Super Mario Brothers U is a lot like Super Mario World, because it's got Yoshi and stuff,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
For me, Super Mario 3D World is like Super Mario 3. It's so many different types of levels, so many neat, like, one-off power-ups and stuff like that. Like, you remember the shoe that you could go in,
yeah,
in Super Mario 3, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which, like, there's an ice skate in Mario 3 and other things like that. Yeah. You can become a bullet bill and things. You know, it's there's so many, and you have to use different devices in creative ways. It's not a very hard game, and that's great. And it also if you lose a level too many times, you can get this like kind of invincibility, like golden, silver, I don't know, tanuki thing that makes you fairly invincible.
Mm-hmm.
This has been so great because I'm a game player, but my wife's not. And at the point where it would have gotten frustrating, like after losing a level for the 30th time, it lets you keep playing. You don't have to use it, but it allows you to keep going.
I have mixed feelings about that, but I think I fall more on the side of it. That is probably a good thing, because you know why? You know, the point anymore is not to frustrate people so much they stop playing.
Well, the thing is, it's set up pretty well though, because on some levels, if you take that power up, I mean, you still have to have some skill. You'll still die if you fall in the pit, you know.
Mm.
But you can't get some of the stars that way, because okay, if that power up, you can't get additional power ups. And as I said, some power ups are required to get some stars.
Got it.
So you're never going to be able to, you know, to clear everything by using that. But it allows people to keep playing the game. Okay. Oh, man. It's you'll be playing a level and you're like, okay, this level is pretty. What? What is right now?
Okay.
Moments.
Okay. And,
like, something will speed up real quick, or suddenly the perspective will change, or in this level you can go behind the curtain, or you know, and you're just playing around it, and it's not holding your hand like so many of the other Nintendo games lately.
Sure.
Like, sometimes I'll just be like, hey, what if I touch the screen here? Whoa! it's not like Navi was popping up going, hey, look at this. You can touch the screen and it'll do this thing. No, there was like this sense of discovery to it.
Oh, that's great.
And it'll be the lowest selling Mario ever.
And that's what I've heard, is that it hasn't. Yeah, it's the worst so far, literally.
Really have to play it
mm.
to know it. And Galaxy, I thought, was amazing, and I really liked it. But Galaxy only appealed to the people who were really into Mario and played every 3D Mario. This game should appeal to everyone. It should sell really well, but because of the platform it's on, it's going to be the least selling.
Well, not just that. Like, you know, just last year saw the release of New Super Mario Brothers U as well. So it's like we've had two new Mario games in 2 years, and it's just like it's oversaturated.
That's the thing, especially, yeah, if you have one Mario game, you're less like, especially now that they're packing it in with the system.
Right. People,
I'm good with Mario. But And I liked Super Mario Brothers U. I enjoyed it, but it's 3D World is so good.
Speaking of gorgeous games, my future retro is Pikmin 3.
You played it good.
Yeah, this is the first occasion I think that we've moved something off the pile of shame. So. I was really, you convinced me basically. I was really excited to play it. I had it, I popped it in, and I was just, something about this style. Like I've played the first Pikmin before, like I mentioned. Something about the style just really struck me. The whole space thing, and then like the font, and it kind of just kind of goes off kilter and flies towards you. Yeah, I liked the story. The astronauts are from a planet that's similar to or very near where Captain Olimar was from, and I haven't beaten the game up, but he's referenced. I guess he's lost on the same planet, and he seems kind of a jerk based on the logs they're finding. So I'm like, where are they going with this? But the mechanics. Go ahead.
Jerk in Pikmin, though. I mean, Pikmin is the most violent Nintendo game ever made. The body is huge.
Pikmin 3 isn't much better, though.
Yeah,
but I enjoyed like the fact that there are multiple characters that were on this ship, and that you can split off. Once you find everyone, you can split off into three different teams. In some ways, because you have a timer and it's based on that day cycle, very similar to how the first Pikmin game was played. You only had like 30 days, I think, to finish the game, 30 in-game days. I think Pikmin 2 removed that time limit, but this is kind of like a cross between the two where you have as many days as you have juice that will last you. I think that's a good way to go about it.
It's an interesting way to do it. Yeah, I liked that. I like that.
But it is really gorgeous. I thought like collecting fruit would be like the least interesting thing to me, because you could find things in the first game that was like Famicom Disk System games, and like bring those back to your ship.
It does look a bit like it was an up-resed game that was meant to be on Wii, but again, Nintendo doesn't really excel so much with like, you know, the actual like raw specs, but they just have very consistent, very nice art styles.
Well, they're using a lot of filters on this. Like there's like a lot of depth of field filters, so things that you aren't focusing on are fuzzy. You know, they're out of focus. I've taken a lot of pictures in the I've taken a few pictures in the Miiverse so far. It's just I couldn't put it down for like 3 days.
The Wii U is puzzling to me, but I think it's just because I am no longer the target gamer.
No, do you know? Sure.
Wii U has more games that I want to play on it than almost any platform I've ever had. It's selling like poop.
Right. Well, that's why you like it. It's because it's the underdog.
Dogs. Heck, I almost bought a Virtual Boy yesterday.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I do support the underdogs, and I'll totally admit that. But at the same time, like, it's the most old school of all the platforms.
Well, especially because all those Kickstarter programs are coming to it. That they're always trying to find a way to get that as one of their goals, one of their stretch goals.
The thing is, they're branding themselves as Wii U, like an extension of the Wii. I really feel that the system feels to me much more like an extension of the GameCube.
Well, we both liked the GameCube, though, so that probably means more to us.
I liked the Dreamcast more than the GameCube, but...
Okay, fair enough.
The controller was definitely made for a more hardcore experience.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the last thing I'll say about Pikmin 3 in specific, is that I really liked the gamepad to TV interplay. Even when you do play on the gamepad only, that mechanic still exists, which is wonderful. But being able to do those shortcuts and just like the go here command was very useful, especially when you're managing multiple teams.
A lot of people have told me that the best way to play Pikmin, though, is with the Wii remote.
I'm not even interested in trying. Why would you do that?
Because apparently, like, it's a faster, like, pointer controls. It's a faster way to play the game. And yeah,
I guess because there's some perspective problems I'm having trying to people, like, enemies that fly through the air, it's harder to hit them.
I haven't really tried it myself, but yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. So pile of shame. What do you got?
Steam.
Just Steam in general.
Remember I told you how long it took me to update and everything. It's because I'm not really a computer game player very much. You know, it takes something pretty big to get me back in there. But
sure.
But I am a sucker that I always buy, like, when I hear that there's a really good sale on Steam or a really good sale on Good Old Games or a Humble Bundle or something, I always buy them. And they just sit there because I don't really play on my computer ever.
Yeah, Steam and Good Old Games are like the definition of creating piles of shame, I think.
The only ones that I really play on my computer are point and clicks because I don't have to have a very powerful computer. I don't have to hook up an extra gamepad, and I can you know, play them whenever. But like any game that's really in there, you know, so Steam in general is my pile of shame, and I okay. really to start playing some of them. How about you?
Yeah, Sam and Max, the Telltale Games, there was a huge sale on like every episode that they released. I bought all of them, and I have only downloaded one, and I have not even opened it yet.
Wow. You played the original Sam and Max, though, right?
No.
Oh. Do you even like adventure games? I mentioned really good adventure games today. Which ones did you play? When you played adventure games, what did you play?
Okay, so I played the Legend of Larry series, the entire thing. Really not age-appropriate at all. I think I played part of King's Quest V.
Okay. Did you play Space Quest?
No, I never played Space Quest. I think, did I Backspace Venture? I don't remember.
Shoot. I know I didn't. I forgot.
Okay. I think I might have missed it, too.
But I'll buy that one. That's one I plan to buy. Space Quest IV was one of the best Sierra games ever. Just absolutely fantastic. If you can get a copy of that, it's not a very long game. It's really, really good. The voice acting's fantastic.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Maybe it was Space Quest that had that sale recently. I don't remember for sure. But yeah, so I played Shadowgate and Deja Vu for NES, like you mentioned. The Indiana Jones game, so the Last Crusade and Fate of Atlantis, Full Throttle, Loom. I really wish they would make a sequel to Loom. Someone just Double Finding and Listening, make a sequel to Loom, please. Just get the rights from LucasArts. I know it's Disney now. They're probably not going to use it. Just try it. What are they going to do?
What version of Loom did you play? Like an old DOS one, or did you play the CD-ROM version?
The CD-ROM version, because it was packed in with something. So I still have that version, and I also have it on Steam.
I didn't. I played the, which was good. I played it from floppy disks, and the ad lib sound was really quite good, but I really want to play a CD based one.
Yeah. The voice acting is great.
Deciding whether I want to go PC or there's one on the TurboGrafx as well.
No, I want to. Oh, I might have it actually. Did I pick that up? I might have it.
Really? Tell me if the sound's good.
Okay.
Yeah, because if it uses Redbook Audio, I might do that because I don't know. I like using controllers and I like PC Engine. Our question for everyone, I guess,
mm-hmm.
what were the adventure games you played, and what do you think of this amazing revival? I was on a NeoGAF and I was reading a thread that there's like 30 new point and clicks coming this year.
Wow.
Kickstarter and companies like Telltale and stuff. And last year there were a good 20. And if this trend continues, you know, there's going to be 10,000 of them by the year 2019.
Oh, good grief! Yeah. So if you're a Broken Age backer too, and you haven't gotten this game yet, get this game. Seriously, when it comes out, when it's finally released, and they finish Act Two, get this game. I promise you.
I almost waited because I'd kind of like, because now I'm kind of sad because I'm going to reach an end pretty soon, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'd be nice to play the full game. But, no, I'm glad I'm playing it while I have a little bit of time.
All right. So if you want to leave any comments, answer any of the questions that we've asked you, you can go to famicondojo.tv/podcast and leave a and leave a comment on our show notes there, or you can talk to us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at Famicom Dojo, or give us a call at 608-492-1923. Leave up to a 3-minute voice message and give us your thoughts, and we'll probably play those thoughts on the air.
We'll definitely play them.
almost certainly.
And make sure you actually do check out the show notes from this podcast, because we mentioned a lot of stuff and you're not going to remember it all, because
I've written it all down too.
Yeah, check out our show notes and leave us a comment. We're really happy to be doing this podcast again. Tell us what you think.
All right, so until next time, the dojo is
a 2-pixel by 2-pixel thing that we have to click on to proceed.
Famicom Dojo.